Ladies and gentlemen, friends, and open-minded people wherever you live across the United States of America, Europe, and the world, this is David Duke, and this is Human Rights Radio. And we are in a strange conundrum in this world right now. There's so much deception, so much. The only way to put it is lack of reality in terms of the presentation of the world by the mainstream media and much of the social media as well. I'm with Dr. Patrick Slattery today, and we're going to be discussing a number of things. We're going to start off with discussing an incredible program that was aired between Joe Rogan, Douglas Murray, and Dave Smith. And Murray is absolutely a toady of the Jewish supremacist movement in the state of Israel. He is a total warmonger. He's never seen a war he didn't like. He supported the war of lies and a war that was so damaging, killed thousands of Americans and wounded tens of thousands of Americans, if not hundreds of thousands of Americans, called the Iraq War and the Afghanistan War. And the truth is that Jewish supremacism is a true phenomenon that's been around for a long, long time. And they've influenced governments long before the modern rise in mainstream media, the rise of Google, which is run by Sergey Brin and Larry Page, two Jewish dedicated Zionists, Facebook, which is run by Mr. Zuckerberg, wonder what he is, the biggest media corporations such as AT&T, which is done by Stanky, Disney, which is one of the biggest corporations in the world, run by Iger. And these are Jews who have very close ties with the Jewish community. And almost all of these entities actually work with the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rit to police the internet, to control free thought. And they're really getting, well, they've always been paranoid, but their paranoia has reached new waves now because they are desperate, because they see the world changing. A recent Pew poll showed for the first time, the biggest plurality of Americans opposed Israel rather than supported Israel. That is an amazing event. Even Republicans who are under the age of 30 now, there's more Republicans even who now are opposed to Israel than before. In fact, in previous years, for many years, it was just the boomers for a long time. And there's still boomers who support Israel, but even those demographics are changing. Dr. Slattery, we're having a very, very interesting process right now. And as an historian, and you're an economist, but you're also a man very aware of historical issues. And we're just having a life-changing, a world-changing series of events going on where, for the first time, the world's greatest ideological, powerful entity of a racist supremacism, a racist and actually hateful doctrine against not only the Palestinians, but to much of the world who looks at the world as their enemies on an ethnic basis. We're seeing a recognition of this entity that's greater now than ever before. Let's just start with that, and I'll just throw it on over to you.
Okay. Just picking up on some of the things you talked about, the policing, the ADL policing of our speech. Maybe you heard it. Norman Finkelstein was talking to, I believe it was Chris Hedges, and was pointing out that, you know, you've got this crackdown on free speech, on students with foreign nationalities who protested against the Israel genocide in Gaza. And he's saying not just at these, not just at Harvard, not just at Columbia, but even, you know, the University of Alabama, much more obscure schools, people, the people who had been, who had participated in these demonstrations are having their visas revoked.
And that's simply opposing the genocide of Israel. Let's be clear about demonstrations were simply about opposing the policy of Israel, foreign country.
The punchline is he was saying, who's telling the Justice Department? Who's telling the State Department? Where are they getting this information from? And this is what, you know, you had started off talking about the ADL. The you've got these Jewish groups that are telling the government who to deport. This is what Norman Finkelstein was getting at. So you know, you've got that. They're telling the government who to deport. Another point he was making on with a different broadcaster, and this other broadcaster who said he identified himself as being half Jewish, was talking about anti-Semitism in America. And Norman Finkelstein just stopped him and said, you know, what do you mean by anti-Semitism? Anti-Semitism, you've got to have a definition. Once upon a time, that might mean not being able to buy a home in a certain neighborhood. It might be not being able to join a certain law firm. And then he challenged the guy. He said, where, tell me, because I would be very curious to know, where in America can a Jew not buy a house? What school in America can a Jew not get into? What law firm? What can they not get into the medical profession? Where is being a Jew a disadvantage? Actually, being a Jew is a great asset. It is an asset in this country. He completely shut the guy down.
Jews have massive privilege. They have massive... It's an advantage to be a Jew in our society because Jews control the mechanisms of power, and therefore they support their fellow Jews. What was the example he used with the New York Times Book Review?
New York Times Book Review. He said it's called the New York Times Review of each other's books because it's a bunch of Jews reviewing each other's books.
It's the Jew Book Review. It's like the Book Review of Jews.
You know, I used to watch The Daily Show, The Daily Show. Yeah, I'd watch The Daily Show. I used to watch Amy Goodman, and sometimes Amy Goodman, you know, there's good stuff on her show. But I'd watch Amy Goodman, and I, you know, or The Daily Show, and what I'd see is Jews talking to other Jews. No, Jews talking to Jews about other Jews. And you know, often what great geniuses someone was, right? So. The Mutual Admiration Society. What's the Academy, the Hollywood Academy? It's a Mutual Admiration Society. So much of academia is this. When you, what I would find is Jewish professors. About half of my professors were Jewish, at least when I was studying in America. About half were Jewish, and the Jews tended to assign readings from other Jewish writers. Much more than the non-Jews would. So, yeah,
of course, that's interesting, isn't it? And he points out that any author of a book, because you look at the New York Reviews, it's really about Jewish authors, primarily Jewish critics about books. You know, what are the Jews are going to? What are they going to appreciate? It what are they going to support? What are they going to condemn? And it's just fascinating when you get into the aspects of Jewish power. And that's one thing I wanted to address with you today, because one of the biggest events of very recent days was the Joe Rogan show. And Joe Rogan's one of the biggest podcaster, maybe the biggest podcaster in the world. He's got a huge audience. It's more than any mainstream media. It's bigger than any NBC show, ABC show, CBS show, you know, whatever, CNN show, NPR show, whatever. It is amazingly powerful. And the reason he's got that support is because he's brought with him a bit of authenticity. Even though I must say that there seems to be a bias, well, I don't think it's an intentional bias, but there was a good study done of the guests on Joe Rogan. And it's overwhelmingly overrepresented by Jews. Of course, part of that is the fact that the mainstream media, which is the biggest single influencer of people in Hollywood as well, promotes Jews. So Jews are giving this air of importance. And those Gentiles, like Douglas Murray is a perfect example of that, who supports Jewish narratives, Jewish causes, Jewish interests, and Jewish hegemony, basically, and Jewish wars, better put that into it, that they're given a huge amount of prestige. They're given a huge amount of form. And he interviewed Douglas Murray, who's, by the way, never seen a war he didn't like, and is a supporter of all these wars, and along with Dave Smith, who actually, in fact, Murray was able to kind of attack Smith as partial Jewish ancestry when Dave Smith got two parents, both Jews, right? So even that is allowed to be criticized if someone is like, so is that supposed to disqualify Mr. Winston from talking about things? Now, I have some problems. And I, by the way, I love the guy in so many ways. He's done so much good work exposing the crimes of Israel, the lies of Israel, the lies of the mass media, the lies of the Jewish deep state. He's exposed the Epstein spy ring. And he's mentioned the fact that Epstein was in partnership with the former head of Israel, that he was in, he was saved from jail by Mr. Dershowitz, which is probably the most biggest, most well-known advocate for Israel and the genocide of Israel, defending it every day in the media. He was financed by people like Wexner of Victoria's Secret, another Jew, and given a $64 million mansion, one of the richest mansions, in fact, and there's a lot of them in New York, but one of the richest in the world. And it was described by the New York Times like a James Bond spy mansion that was rigged with cameras, every hallway, every bathroom, every bedroom. And he had famous people come and stay with him, and probably supplied with underage women and underage boys, if that was their preference, and then had the ultimate, blackmail material. The ultimate, it's almost like the mafia. I read about a story just the other day about a mafiosa, and they even had a video about this where they had to go kill just a random person. So, and they recorded it to keep them under control. But that was part of the price to control or join the mafia, is that you're going to be on tape killing just an innocent person, and they killed an innocent woman. This was a YouTube video about this. But this Epstein spy ring, Epstein, Ghislaine Maxwell was the daughter of Robert Maxwell, the most famous spy for Israel. When he died, he was giving a full state funeral for Israel, attended by the last five leaders of the Mossad, the Jewish intelligence agencies. We got a picture of the guy instead of his French deal, Brunel, Jewish. A lot of the people that he associated with, he was very deep involved with Wexner's mega group, which some of the richest Jewish media personalities and powerful people, like the head of the world, Jewish Congress, WJC, and that's Lauder. And the Jews involved in all this, Ari Menashe, who was a member of the Israeli intelligence, came forward. His conscience, I guess, was bothering, came forward and said, yeah, Maxwell was my agent, and Ghislaine was my agent, and Epstein, I was dealing with them for the Mossad. And this was a Mossad spy ring. But you can't even imagine this stuff or this kind of thing happening. You couldn't even consider it as a possibility if you think about the fact if this was a Russian ring and with very close ties with Mr. Putin. Sorry, there seems to be a grass cutting outside my place, but I hope you don't mind personally, but we can deal with this
Can't
later.
hear it.
Well,
It's
that's
no
good.
problem, no problem.
So anyway, so when you look at this situation this was one of the biggest stories in the world. It had everything. It had sex. It had famous people, famous entertainers, famous politicians, presidents, former presidents like, you know, Clinton. Even Hillary went to the island with Clinton. I mean, you had the princes of Great Britain come to the Epstein Island. Massive crimes being committed. Epstein was given a, they were told by, there was intelligence there, and sentenced to go home every day from prison and molest more girls at his mansion in West Palm Beach. This was a Jewish spy ring. It's obvious. Yet, it was hardly a single mention in any mainstream media that this was, in fact, a spy ring led by Epstein and Maxwell, with ties to her father, ties with the Mossad, and literally by a man, Epstein, who is in business partnership worth hundreds of millions of dollars with, guess what, the former head of Israel and the head of all intelligence of Israel, Barak. So, I mean, when you look at this all together, and you realize that this is just not even mentioned in mainstream media, how could this be? How could this possibly be the way? That's entirely a different reality of this biggest story in the world, yet there was never any mention of the giant elephant in the room. I call him a Tyrannosaurus Rex these days, because this is a, it's much more of a predator, like a dinosaur, than it is like an elephant. It's definitely carnivorous, right? It consumes people's lives. It consumes, and Israel has cost so many lives, and Jews have, and Jewish elite have controlled and caused so many wars that could have been avoided and shouldn't have been fought, like the Iraq War, which even Jeffrey Sachs admits was a war. Sorry to go so long there, but that's just another good example of the fact that we live in a fictional universe in a way. It's no wonder a lot of people believe a lot of kooky conspiracy theories that are really kooky, because it seems like if they can get away with this kind of conspiracy, what can't they get away with? And that's what a lot of people are thinking these days. Your thoughts?
Well, you do hear that. You do hear that. The conspiracy theories, this is one of the things you'll hear. It's like, well, if they, you know, if they're lying to us about this, what aren't they lying to us about? And unfortunately, there's not an easy comeback to that. Well, they can't be lying about everything. But yeah, I mean, when you look at the past, this decade of the 2020s, there's plenty of things that, you know, you could use the word hoax or whatever, but how much lying was there about COVID? How much lying was there about January 6th? How much lying was there about the election? How much lying was there about Black Lives Matter? How much lying is there about October 7th? You know, so the thing is.
And the previous Jewish massacres and terrorism before October 7th, which was far, far, far more of a greater human suffering and magnitude and death than anything the Palestinians did in October 7th. And since that time, we've had, even the lowest estimates are 50,000 civilians dead, including around 20,000 children. It's amazing to think about the difference, yet Israel's never described as terroristic. It's never described as monsters. It's never described as murderous. And yet that's always obligatory for any discussion of Hamas on October 7th, where 36 children died. Any child dying is a terrible thing. But how in the world can you say that 36 children dying, and probably a lot of those were the Hannibal Directive, which is Jewish fire, indiscriminate fire, because they didn't want any Jewish captives held. But you compare 36, how do you compare 36 kids dying to maybe 30,000 kids dying in the last number of years of Israeli attacks on innocent civilians, mainly women and children? And yet, it's not Israel that's described as a terrorist state. It's not Israel described as monsters and human animals. But we see this outplay of the media, which is exactly the opposite of reality.
Yeah, And what I was saying about the many obvious lies is that it destroys people's faith in expertise, and it destroys people's faith in authority. And so then you're going to get all sorts of there's a collapse of authority. You get all sorts of conspiracy theories. That was a point I wanted to make. Now, regarding Hamas, everybody's always obliged to condemn Hamas, right? And,
you can't even start the conversation until you have to admit the terrorist and horrific and unbelievable horror of what they did on October 7th. And they leave out much bigger horrors and bigger mass murder of children and others before that time.
If October 7th had no history, and if October 7th had no future, and you're just looking at October 7th in isolation, maybe you could say something. Mm-hmm. But it did have a history. It had a long history. And Gaza, the environment for Hamas, it was a complete vacuum for justice. There was no justice there. These people had their entire lives. I mean, the typical Hamas fighter is maybe
grew up in a prison camp and lived his whole life in a prison camp.
Lives a whole life in a prison camp. They have no access to justice. They can't make an appeal to any authority. They can't make an appeal to the Israeli Supreme Court. They can't make an appeal to the United Nations. They can't make an appeal to the International Court of Justice. Nobody. They can't make an appeal to the Arab League. Nobody. They were completely forsaken. They were completely forsaken. And so who is in a position to judge them then?
That's what Finkelstein says so acutely and so intelligently and cognitively.
And Finkelstein is like one person who actually has devoted his entire adult life to this cause.
Mm-hmm.
Finkelstein, having devoted his entire adult life to the cause, almost his entire adult life, he confesses that maybe a year or two before October 7th, he
gave up and he kind of went to different things.
He got so discouraged that he gave up after having spent more than four decades. But who else? I mean, nobody else. I mean, yeah, there are a lot of Arab or Palestinians who have devoted themselves, but they don't have, for the most part, they don't have the same reach. But, why is a guest on any news show, why are they in a position to condemn Hamas? Well, how much, random guest on random news show, how much of their adult life did they devote to trying to, have they done anything? Have they ever lifted a finger to try to improve the lot of these forsaken people? And so I don't think anybody is in a position to condemn Hamas, because Hamas, what options did they have?
And well, we can always say that it's wrong to kill a civilian, a man, a woman, a child. It's even wrong, I think, to unprovoked anyway, or if you're not defending yourself, theoretically, for you to kill even people that happen to be serving in the armed forces, which are no choice for the people necessarily in their country, just random killing people. But if you say that Hamas is guilty of these things, then exponentially, at an incredibly horrific magnitude, Israel is more guilty of those things. If you say that what happened on October 7th makes Hamas terrorists, where 36 children were died, what do you say about over 3,000 children that died in previous Jewish IDF raids? The IDF, what is that? Israeli Defense Force? No, it's the Israeli Terrorist Force is what it is, but no one is going to call the IDF terrorists, even when they killed 3,000 children, and when 60 or 70% of the victims are women and children. So if this is why you call Hamas evil, and of course the lies which the media spread, and they knew exactly what they were doing. One of the good things I thought about David Smith's debate with Douglas Murray is he called out a lot of these unbelievable lies. He called out, for instance, we were talking about more Jewish lies, and there's a reason for this. We know the Jewish elite, the Jewish establishment, hated Trump. They voted against Trump, 80% of Jews, and 80% of Jews still support Israel, even though there are some Jews that I do, you know, really respect, and I honor people like Jeffrey Sachs, who pointed out that the Iraq War was a Jewish war. He names the Jews. He does, you know, he makes it really clear. He doesn't say the Jews did the war, but he points out every single person he says orchestrated the Iraq War, the important orchestrators of this war, were Jews, from Netanyahu on down, but also Jews in America, Jews who would control our State Department, and how Israel controls our political process with the money. He wrote an article saying as well, he said, not only was the Iraq War a Jewish war for American lives and American money was spent by the trillions, by the way, is what they cost us, that these wars were fought for Israel, not for America, because of the Jewish control of these important government officials. We got a lot of noise going on right now. Hopefully you can hear this. Okay, so when you look at this, again, the narrative is so such a lie, and this is what's so disgusting about, you know, Douglas Murray. I mean, he's never seen a war he didn't like. And, you know, so we've had tens of thousands of women and children. And I want to mention something to you, because I would have loved to talk about this with your presence the other day. The issue, that one of the issues that I see is this. And I, again, I'm really thankful for Dave Smith. They talked about a lot of things. In fact, Joe Rogan had on with him on a show, Cooper, and another gentleman. Eon, I think his name is, and they both talked about some of the aspects of the Second World War, and Douglas Murray attacked them by saying that they were lessening the evil of Hitler, or they were trying to defend Hitler, and that's not what they did at all. In fact, they went out of their way to condemn Hitler. Everybody's got to do that the same way you got to do that to Hamas, right? Every time you talk about Hamas. But the truth is, what they said was a very valid point, that maybe some of the origins of the Second World War, and even the First World War, and many other wars, such as the Iraq War and the Afghanistan War, and God knows, that these wars originated, right, with a certain narrative that were based on lies. And the truth is that whatever you say about whatever Hitler did, it's true that Germany did attack Poland. And the conflict that happened in Poland was because of the fact that Germans were extracted or taken, the land which they lived in for generations, for 1,000 years, and where they're the majority of, and, you know, created that in terms of the histories of Europe, that lived there, they were basically put into bondage, captivity by another nation that hated that German minority. And they weren't allowed. They also divided with the Versailles Treaty the German nation from itself. The main areas of Germany were divided with a so-called Polish corridor, which cut off Germany from going on a straight line over land to their own lands in East Prussia, what was what's today Kaliningrad, which was Königsberg. And they stopped this, and they took a lot of the other people from Silesia, which were overwhelmingly German. And the other aspects of the German conflict and the German demands were simply, like the Sudeten Germans, which are 90% German, that wanted to unite with Germany freely. We know that's a fact. That's, you know, that's self-determination. They even acted like the activity in Austria was some sort of aggression when Austria voted 95% to join Germany because they felt a connection with Germany. They spoke the same language, the same culture. They were divided by the Habsburg empire and so forth, but they felt like they were the same people, the same traditions, the same history, the same values, and they wanted to unite. So that was Hitler's main argument. Now, the interesting thing is when the war became a world war, it was after France and Britain declared war on Germany with the French Empire globally and the British Empire. It suddenly made it a world war. And Germans tried to prevent this becoming a world war. In fact, from the very early stages, in the first few weeks of the war, where there were just a few thousand casualties, not the millions of people that died in the war, Germany said, let's make peace. All we want is our original borders of 1914. And we want our Germans to be united back with their country and allowed to have self-determination, democracy, basically, for these people who shouldn't be punished indiscriminately. They should be punished collectively because they're Germans. That's against any sort of human right. That was what the war was started for, and it could have been solved. The question then remains, and this was never even addressed in this particular Rogan show, but the question remains is, what was the cost of pursuing this war rather than making peace? And the fact is that most historians say that the war cost anywhere between 60 million and 80 million lives. 60 and 80 million people. And probably hundreds of millions that suffered. And there is pretty good argument that even in what's called the greatest crime, which is the Holocaust, which is not the greatest mass murder, the communist Holocaust far exceeded that. Just in Ukraine alone, the Holodomor killed more Christians in Ukraine, led by a Jew by the name of Lazar Kaganovich, and the Jewish power structure over Bolshevism killed more Ukrainians than what happened against Jews. That's not defending anything that and any crimes against Jews which are committed, which we all would oppose. But the point is, would the Holocaust likely have happened? I don't think it could have happened. Because Germany, all through the Germany, the Olympics were there. They've always allowed journalists in there. Israel doesn't allow a single foreign journalist, you know, unless they approve it, right, into Gaza, period. Because they don't want the information about it. But Germany always allowed media there, pro or con. They always did that. And in peacetime, if it would have been peace, there'd been no possible way for them to have any sort of what's alleged to be an industrial, murder and gassings or killing of Jews. They couldn't have been hidden. It would have been the biggest thing in the world, the biggest subject of the world. The media was certainly not pro-German. And it made the Holocaust, or what's called the Holocaust, impossible. So even the lives of Jews that died, as well as the lives of countless Russians, countless Poles, countless people, you know, from this war, would have not been spent. What was not the cure against the evil, so-called evil of Germany, was not the cure of killing 60 to 80 million people, worse than whatever the alleged crimes were against Germany before that time, which very few people had died before the time this became a world war, which could have been avoided. These are legitimate subjects that need to be confronted, but we don't get a confrontation of this because this is a Jewish war as much as the Iraq war was a Jewish war. And we know the Jewish influence in the Iraq war. Jeffrey Sachs exposes it. And we certainly must know and must understand the Jewish influence in the Second World War. And the fact that we had a Second World War, and Patrick Buchanan wrote about it very well in his Unnecessary War book, it kind of makes sense, I would think, that avoiding that war, which would have saved 60 to 80 million lives, including no Holocaust, probably, would have been something that would be worthy of diplomacy and peace, rather than the Second World War. What are your thoughts on that real quickly?
Well, what's talked about as the Holocaust, I think, is exaggerated, embellished, and decontextualized. How many Jews died in World War II? A Holocaust survivor is defined as a Jew who had lived in some part of Europe at some point between 1933 and 1945 and didn't die and was still alive in 1945. That's a Holocaust survivor. Obviously, in Europe, in between 1933 and 1945, there were a substantial number of Jews who died. Raoul Hildeberg used a methodology which I think would tend to exaggerate the number or overestimate the number.
He said actually 5 million was his books.
He said 5.1. So if you're going to go around saying 6 and the you know, the dean of Holocaust scholars using that methodology, which actually would tend to overestimate, because what his methodology was to compare census data before that period with census data after that period, meaning that Jews like and then subtract and then do a subtraction and an adjustment for natural population growth or, you know, death rates, birth rates. Somebody like Madeleine Albright, who pretended not to be Jewish, she was, when she was born, she was Jewish. And then afterwards, she was pretending not to be Jewish. If she's not counted as a Jew, then she's counted as a Holocaust death.
By the way, we should always mention, while she was praising, she was literally saying that, yeah, we think the destruction and the death of 500,000 Iraqi children were worth it. We should have sanctions against Iraq. We think it's definitely worth it to kill 500,000 children. This is a good example of the incredible hypocrisy of the mainstream media and mainstream history, correct?
Yeah.
Why is she not condemned? Why is she not called a war criminal to kill 500,000 children by blocking any aid and antibiotic and the proper nutrition that they need to survive in that country?
Exaggerated by how much? Who knows? I don't know, because we're not allowed to study it. Yeah. Embellished? There's all sorts of embellishments. I mean, they used to talk about lampshades and soap as if it was serious. Nobody claims that seriously that Germans were manufacturing lampshades and soap out of Jewish corpses.
So, that just turned out to be a total lie.
And you know, there's a lot of other things they've had to back away from. So exaggerated, embellished, but most importantly, decontextualized. Because there was a reason that people in Eastern and Central Europe were alarmed at Jewish activity. Because you look at the Russian Revolution first and foremost. You mentioned the Holodomor, which was done by the Jewish Bolsheviks.
And covered up by the Jewish New York Times. That's the Holocaust deniers. And that was 7 to 11 million, according to United Nations study done in 2003 with 24 leading nations, including United States historians there, confirming this as a group said that the death toll was, between 7 and 11 million, or 7 and 10 million. That's literally more than the Holocaust.
So, you know, embellished, decontextualized, taken completely out of context. There is a context. The Jews were playing hardball in the first half of the 20th century. You had a Jewish takeover of Hungary, Bolshevik Jewish takeover of Hungary, of Bavaria. You know, you had Jews involved.
Winston Churchill writes extensively about that. Yeah,
exactly. The Jewish Bund in Poland, which never took over the country, but it was always looming large in the shadows. Jews were involved in these anarchist movements that were doing bombings and assassinations, and so Jews were belligerents in the violence of the first half of the 20th century. But the Holocaust narrative always decontextualizes it, and that's why you don't get, and this allows Jews to think of themselves as being perpetual victims, needing perpetual and extreme vigilance,
and this leads them
to extreme violence. This leads the Israelis to extreme violence, because they have a warped sense of their own history. It's leading them to atrocities.
Yes.
So friends don't let friends commit atrocities.
Yeah, friends don't let friends commit a Holocaust. Here is one example of that is the great work of Norman Finkelstein. He wrote a book called The Holocaust Industry. And actually, he wrote, and he said this in an interview or two, he actually said at one point, he said, millions of people may be forgiven for thinking that some of the things about the Holocaust, you know, aren't true, because he said there's so much obvious fraud that's been disproven by so-called Holocaust survivors and the stuff that's in the common media. You know, I'm not going to deny the Holocaust. I'm not going to say the Holocaust didn't happen. I'm not even going to argue the numbers or how much it's been exaggerated or anything like that. But I would like to point out some truths that can be verified by anybody that looks into it that may raise certain questions. Again, I'm not saying that there wasn't everything the Jews say had happened, and I do believe there were atrocities and terrible things and mass murders of Jews, no question, during the war. And so I want to make that clear, otherwise I'm in jail myself and you're in jail yourself. But the issue, here's one issue that's really important. The only internet that during the Second World War, by the way, Hitler followed the Geneva Convention, and Germans followed the Geneva Convention, by the way, in the war. They were very careful. American soldiers were never tortured. That's a fact. I knew people who were, in fact, in prison in Germany. In fact, one of them that escaped, John Rarick, who became a congressman from Louisiana. And this, everybody admits this fact. Basically, American prisoners of war fed the same thing as the guards. The interesting thing is the only, you know, the international organization that's most famous for recording civilian deaths in wars and oppressions and mass murders and all these other things is the Red Cross. We have the American Red Cross. We have Red Cross in all the European countries, it was including Germany. They were all members of international conventions with the Red Cross. And interestingly enough, the German government allowed the inspection of all their concentration camps during the Second World War on a regular basis, about every few weeks. They allowed Red Cross representatives to go in there by the hundreds and hundreds. They interviewed the prisoners. They recorded their complaints. They picked up millions of letters and whatever, and things that were sent from the prisoners back to their family members outside of the camps and in Europe and America, and millions of letters. They delivered millions of letters to the prisoners as well, and they inspected, and they did reports on the camps all during the war. Now, the interesting thing is that after the war, the Red Cross, headquartered in Switzerland, which was overwhelmingly run by non-Germans, even though the Germans were part of the Red Cross too, and Germans were part of the inspections of American camps, by the way, by the Red Cross in America. But Germans were part of this, but this was compiled overwhelmingly by non-Germans, and they did a complete report on the estimated Jewish deaths in the concentration camp system in Germany. And we're talking about Auschwitz and Maidenbeck and Belsen, Bergen-Belsen, all these other things, right? And the International Red Cross, and this is a fact, it's a big Swedish report, both in German, and it's also been translated to English. They did this big report, and their estimate, this is the International Red Cross. Now, I'm not saying that there was no Holocaust, because this report may have it wrong or may have it right, whatever. But the Red Cross estimated, around 200,000 Jews had suffered or died in the camp system. And they attributed this. They didn't, there's not one word about gas chambers. There's not one word about intentional murder. And they went to all these camps, so they would have been able to hear all the stories, whatever stories there were. And there weren't even the stories that they say are common among Jews, can't even be validated, because the Red Cross got them firsthand from the camp prisoners themselves. They said, they wrote a report and said it was something like 220,000 Jews perished. And for lots of reasons, in great part disease that ravaged the camps because of lack of medicine, because of the complete collapse of Germany and transportation system and bridges and roads and transportation and food for these major camps. But they said that this can mainly be associated with disease, with starvation, nutritional issues, and so forth. And they even did list the German reports of executions for whatever crimes which were supposedly committed during this time, which were in the thousands, not in the millions. But this is what the International Red Cross did. Now, this is an amazing fact now. that the President of the United States, Franklin Roosevelt, the people getting out these rumors about how there was a mass extermination of Jews going on in these camps. The Red Cross, again, was allowed to go to all of these camps in Germany and the Eastern Territories, and they wrote about this. And so Franklin Roosevelt contacted the head of the Red Cross and said, "We're getting these reports and we're getting these allegations that there's a mass murder going on of Jews." And this is in 1944, that's the height of it. This is in 1945, early. And he says, "Can you look into this? What are your own people that go to the camps and look into the camps and investigate this? What is the International Red Cross saying about this?" And the head of the American International, you know, the head of the Red Cross from the United States reported back and said, "We've conferred with all our people from Switzerland, from all the Eastern, all the Western countries, which have all been allowed, allied countries, to inspect these camps. And we've come to the conclusion that no, there's no program of purposeful extermination of Jews in the camps." Now, that's what the Red Cross said. Now, that I'm not saying there wasn't a Holocaust. What I'm saying is that's what the Red Cross said. And that's the only international institution of note, by the way, and they've kept track on, they also keep track about a lot of the wars all over the world. And they say, by the way, the Gaza war is killing more children than all the other wars combined in the world. That's how bad it is, what's going on in Gaza right now. And but the International Red Cross kept track of it, and that's what they wrote. So this may offer some questions depending on it. You know, I'm not going to tell you that the Holocaust didn't happen or that atrocities against Jews didn't happen, but isn't this an interesting point, a factual thing of history? The International Red Cross wrote a complete report on it, and their estimates were in the hundreds of thousands, not in the millions. Low hundreds of thousands, not millions. And they claimed it was starvation, hunger, and disease as a result of these conditions.
When was the report written?
At the end of the war. Yeah. And it was done by the International Red Cross. That's the official report out of, you know, Geneva, Switzerland, and Zurich, Switzerland. And by the way, again, we have the letters from the head of the Red Cross to Franklin Roosevelt, saying that our International Red Cross and the Red Cross, of which we're a member of across Europe, we've inquired in this, and there seems to be no really evidence of that there was a purposeful program of extermination. Isn't that interesting? That's interesting, though. That doesn't mean that there wasn't one, right? I'm not saying there wasn't one because of this. But
well, what I want to say is earlier in the show, we talked about how the various lies about what COVID or January 6th or whatever decreases trust in authority, right? Mm-hmm. Now, if authority is caught lying over and over again, there's going to be a decreased faith in it. Now, when Israel just lies over and over, Israel and its supporters, like Sheryl Sandberg. Sheryl Sandberg, somebody that Norman Finkelstein's always mentioning. She was the chief operating officer of Facebook. So she was very early in on Facebook. And so mm-hmm. she's some multi-billionaire associated with Facebook.
We got 2 minutes
Facebook.
Left, so we got to go fast.
And she created a movie alleging mass rapes of Israeli women, Jewish women, by Hamas with zero evidence. When the Israeli government and Israeli supporters transparently lie about things, well, what is that going to do to the Holocaust narrative? You know,
isn't especially when you have a lot of motive, because the foundation of Israel was going on at the same time. And when you go to war, you want to justify and say your enemies are mass murderers, and there's a justification for this thing. And there's no question that the Holocaust or the sufferings of Jews during the Second World War was used to justify the ethnic cleansing, the mass murder, the wiping away of 500 villages, and the tortures that were going on. And they've been torturing people in their prisons. That's it. Thanks for being with me today, Dr. Slattery. It's really been great to have you on, and we talked about a lot of forbidden subjects here today, but It's certainly worth inquiry, and it's certainly worth thought about these things. And the only way to know the truth is allow freedom of speech. And maybe that's why the Jewish establishment has been so anxious to shut down freedom of speech and thought, and to imprison even academics that may have a different view of the Second World War, or different aspects of the Holocaust, or a different aspect even exposing the genocide of the Palestinian people by the Jewish state. The last subject that I want to talk about in the last, I think we have almost 2 minattehere here. And thanks again, Dr. Slattery, for being with me. I really do appreciate the fact that you're here. So I want to mention one thing. The other day I was talking about, I really like the work of Dave Smith, and I was pointing out that when they talked about Hamas, they never really bring out, they keep saying, oh yeah, it's a terrible thing, horrible thing. He shouldn't say that without putting it in the context that Jews before October 7 killed thousands of Palestinian children. And if Palestinians from Hamas are supposed to be called horrible people by killing 36 allegedly, and by the way, that's 36 out of 1,150. That's less than 3%. Think about that, folks. Whereas the Jewish death of children in their raids were 25%, according to official international sources, 30%, 40%, up to 50% and more. And women as well, vast majorities. It's just amazing that the hypocrisy, yet they're never, Israel's never called a terrorist state. And then they kill another 50,000 officially, but it's really probably 150,000 since that time. It's just amazing. And another point is that here's Netanyahu pointing out and saying to the people of Israel that the Palestinians are Amalekites, and that's who they are, and they're our enemy. But every Jew in Israel knows that the commandment of God was to kill all the Amalekites, man, woman, child, even suckling baby. The idea of killing suckling babies along with their mothers would be certainly classified as the most monstrous, horrific crime imaginable by people. That's the way it's always been treated by every nation of the world and every people of the world. Yet you had the Prime Minister of Israel saying this and promoting this very lie. This genocide is not only proven by the facts on the ground, it's also proven with the intent, because this is exactly what Netanyahu intended. And this is what they promoted in evoking the things with the Amalekites. Also, I wish they'd have brought up, they don't hardly ever do this, how about the mass rapes, which is admitted going on in Israeli prisoners against Palestinian men as well as women? And many organizations showing massive rapes of Palestinians. Everything is the opposite of what the Jewish media and the Jewish establishment presents us. Thanks for being with me, everybody. Go to davidduke.com. Go to my Gab at Real David Duke. Go to my Odyssey at Real David Duke. Watch my original groundbreaking videos on Odyssey. I want to tell you all I care about you and I appreciate your support. Go to Box 188, Mandeville, Louisiana, 70470, and send us a contribution if you can. We certainly need your support. Love y'all. See you tomorrow.